This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Thank you and good afternoon. Well, today we're having another conversation about cover crops, but this time it's about a new practice, and that's interseeding cover crops with corn. According to crop consultant Dan Towery, the practice is still going through a trial phase, but farmers are having some success. Dan has been working with farmers in several different areas, and we had a chance to talk some details about the new practice.
Well, originally from Illinois, up Havana way, currently residing over in Indiana and West Lafayette, but do a lot of work Indiana, Illinois, primarily a little bit in Iowa and Ohio, basically around the area of cover crops and no-till and soil health.
And we're at a cover crop field day today being sponsored by the Macoupin County Farm Bureau and Soil and Water. And one topic that you spoke on was crimson clover as a cover crop and using that in corn. And as I understand, this is a new concept, so maybe fill us in on some of the work that is being done with that right now and the ideas behind it.
Yeah, actually, it's what we call interseeding. So this is seeding a cover crop when the corn is between V4 and V7, so about knee-high. It goes against everything that we've been taught to have something green out there with the corn at that stage. So we have to modify the residual herbicide program, just very short residuals. Actually, we're using crimson clover as well as things like annual ryegrass, hairy vetch, radishes. So there's quite a few cover crops. But again, they need to be shade tolerant. And so far, this is, again, experimental. It's work in progress. I've been going up to Quebec, and they've been doing it up there for 6 years now, and the acres keep growing. The preliminary conclusions is that it will work. Get the very short residual herbicides put down, seed between, again, that when the corn is about knee-high. And we've got guys who have modified a side dress applicator, put an air seeder on it, all kinds of different ways. It seems as though one of the requirements is that it get some light to stay alive, where the corn has high population, very tall, too much shade for an extended period of time in August, and we lose the stand. But we've had guys do it in seed corn and popcorn using a flex ear hybrid. We want to experiment with upright leaf. So again, it's like anything, it needs to be used in the proper situation, and that's what we're in the process of trying to figure out.
So you said interseeding, it's going against everything we've ever known, because like you said, usually you want that crop to be the only thing that's growing in the field at that time. So why try this? What are the thoughts of the benefits that it could provide?
Well, the biggest issue is, and this year's a perfect example, harvest was late. In many cases, crops just wouldn't dry down. If you were going to plant a cover crop, you know, depending on what cover crop you select, the timing needs to be right, especially if you're going with a radish, a legume, something like that. So this is, especially if we can combine it with another trip that we're already doing, like side dressing, then we're combining operations and having the cover crop seeded, come in and harvest the corn, and that's it. You're done. Got the cover crop growing. Hopefully it will grow through the fall, on into next spring, and ready for the next crop.
You said this is experimental, so still trials being done. Any of those being done here close to Illinois?
Yeah, in the northern part. I'm working with some guys up west of Chicago. Actually, against my recommendation, did 600 acres. And it was very dry in June. And report came back, it's a bust. It didn't come up. Well, then they got rain about, I don't know, June 22nd or so. And they called back, hey, we got a stand after all. So, you know, it's one of those things, and it turned out very well for them.
Anything that I failed to ask about crimson clover, the experiments that are going on, or anything else about cover crops that you'd like to share with our listeners?
No, it's just, you know, the whole idea of using cover crops, it's actually an old practice, but I think some of the ways we're using it, the techniques, the equipment, to apply it are new. You know, I got to relate a story about the interceding. Actually, I was looking through an ag historical book, and it had a picture out of the mid-40s, and they were with the horses doing the last cultivation in the corn. And guess what they were doing? They were seeding a legume behind them. So it's really kind of different parameters, but it was actually adapting an old technique to new efforts.
And once again, that was a crop consultant from Western Indiana, Dan Towery. And we'll have more farm news right after these messages. The FSA deadline to submit ballots for the 2016 county committee elections has been extended to make sure farmers have enough time to vote. Voters now have until December 13th to turn in ballots to their FSA office. Producers who have not received their ballot can pick one up at their local office. And in order to be eligible to vote in the county committee election, producers must participate or cooperate in an FSA program. Ballots returned by mail must be postmarked no later than December 13th, and as it is every year, one-third of county committee seats are up for election. In other news, USDA Secretary Vilsack says the farm income and financial forecast for 2016 shows the health of the overall farm economy is strong in the face of challenging markets. Released by the Ag Department's Economic Research Service, the report shows final income for 2016 is expected to decline after dropping in 2015 following record highs between 2012 and 2014. Net cash farm income is forecast at $90.1 billion, and net farm income is forecast at $66.9 billion for 2016. Net cash farm income is expected to fall by 14.6%, while net farm income is forecast to decline by 17.2%. Vilsack noted that debt-to-equity ratios, which are two key indicators of the farm economy's health, continue to be near all-time lows. Further, Vilsack says higher off-farm earnings are expected to help stabilize losses due to the low commodity prices for rural communities. The Centers for Disease Control has linked a multi-state salmonella outbreak of a multi-drug-resistant salmonella strain to dairy bull calves from livestock markets in Wisconsin. The Center for Disease Control says it's working with Wisconsin Health and Ag agencies, along with several other states and the U.S. Department of Ag, to investigate the outbreak. Meat industry publication Meeting Place says the outbreak has infected 21 people from 8 states, and the first illness was reported in January of this year. 15 of 19 infected subjects interviewed by the CDC reported contact with dairy bull calves or other cattle the week before becoming ill. Laboratory testing concluded that the outbreak is likely linked to ill calves. And that's all we have today for your WSMI Farm Show. I'm Katie Wilson.